Welcome to MuggleCast, your weekly ride into the Wizarding World fandom. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And I'm Laura.
Grab your wands and your best pair of running shoes as we try to avoid Death Eaters, Vila, and annoying ministry officials, because this week we're discussing Goblet of Fire, Chapter 9, The Dark Mark. There's no better chapter to discuss during the holidays as I wear a Santa Claus hat for our final episode of the year.
This is about as cheery a chapter as Batman Returns is for Christmas movies. It's got a lot of darkness.
Yes. And we will be off for the next 2 weeks, but don't fret, because we'd love to see you on Patreon, where there's tons of bonus episodes available, including a brand new favorite Headcanons installment, which is holiday themed. So definitely check that out at patreon.com/MuggleCast. Speaking of bonus MuggleCast, we also have another bonus up right now. We look back on 2023 and look ahead to 2024. And by the way, speaking of 2024, beginning in 2024, those who financially support us via Apple Podcasts will be getting access to each installment of bonus MuggleCast. This is a new feature for Apple Podcast subscribers. We're also going to be raising the price of this subscription to $4.99 a month to accommodate for the additional content, and because Micah always says it's such a great deal. So it's time for us.
Don't blame me.
Well, you do always, to be fair, you do always say it's such a great deal.
Yeah, and it is such a great deal that we need to bring the price up, along with new benefits.
Well, look, the way that I think about this is you're getting four episodes every month, and then you're getting two bonus MuggleCast segments. So that's less than a dollar per piece of content.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, isn't it ad-free?
It's ad-free, and you get it early.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how you can support us.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
less than a Starbucks.
It's less than a Starbucks.
A Starbucks?
You can give up one Starbucks a month to get ad-free, early access, six pieces of content.
I agree.
You can take that to the bank. Micah needs like
a Starbucks
catchphrase. Yeah.
Anyway, there's many more benefits at patreon.com/MuggleCast for even more value. So definitely check either of those out. We really appreciate your support. We're only doing the show because we have listener support. It really is as simple as that. And we have some big plans for 2024 as well. And again, we could only continue in this world of podcasting with your support at our backs. So thank you very much, everybody. Like I joked, but also I wasn't really joking, today's chapter by chapter is pretty dark. So first, we're going to have a little holiday fun. We're going to take a quiz together in which we have to identify what Harry Potter book a variety of Christmas-related passages are from. This is from Sporkle, and it's a 7-minute timer, but we're definitely going to be able to knock this out in faster than 7 minutes, I think. All right, and listeners, obviously, please play along with us. So here we go. We got 16 questions. Here's the first Christmas-related quote. His heart swelled with happiness and relief, and he felt like joining in as they heard Sirius tramping past their door toward Buckbeak's room, singing "God rest ye merry hippogriffs" at the top of his voice.
Order the Phoenix.
Order Sirius, the Phoenix.
Yeah, Sirius Black is only alive in two of those books.
Go back to sleep. Nah, presents. Harry and Seamus.
Ooh.
So the options are Goblet of Fire, Prisoner, Order, or Chamber.
I feel like it's Chamber.
This sounds like an early one to me, too.
Goblet?
Maybe? Goblet? I was thinking Goblet because they're not very nice to each other. Maybe it was just the way that it was being read.
Let's go Goblet, just because we've seen Chamber more recently, or we've read it, and it seems like...
Oh, and you were right.
Good job. Good call.
Next one. The lake froze solid and the Weasley twins were punished for bewitching several snowballs so that they followed Quirrell around.
Well, obviously, there's only
Deathly Hallows.
There's only one option.
Number four. Another Christmas has come and gone and I didn't get a single pair. People will insist on giving me books.
Also, Philosopher's Stone. Yeah. Click on that sexy Thomas Taylor cover.
On Christmas morning, Harry was woken by Ron throwing his pillow at him.
Ooh.
That's generic.
That might be the line that directly precedes the next line of presents.
Sorcerer's Stone?
It's either Sorcerer or Chamber.
We already had two Sorcerers, so I vote Chamber.
Yeah. I think
it might be...
It's going to suck if it's Philosophers again. It's one of those two. I agree.
Okay, I'm going to say...
Just
I'm gonna
executive chamber, decision.
Chamber. Click on chamber, it's fine.
Oh. No! Oh, it was prisoner.
Oh,
we were all wrong.
Next one. I'd rather have them than that necklace. Half-Blood Prince?
That's Half-Blood Prince.
It's the only one I can think of that mentions a necklace.
Yes. Next one. It's Christmas, and it's not a crime to want to come to a party. Oh, and Slughorn said that, so obviously.
That's obvious.
Half-Blood Prince. Okay, the more the merrier.
Said serious.
Yeah. So order
five.
Yeah.
Oi, presents.
What? Oh, okay.
See, Sporkle.
All right. We're on the clock. Just answer.
This has to be chamber. It's probably chamber.
Yeah.
Oh, it's prisoner again.
Oh, it's also prisoner. Oh. Wait a minute. In POA,
that's the book we just
Ron
reread.
Both hits him with a pillow and says oi, presents. Oh.
Actually, that tracks.
All right. Next one from Hagrid. Come on, cheer up. It's nearly Christmas.
And chamber is not an option.
Oh, it's not an option.
Yeah. No.
So
maybe,
is it philosopher?
Gobbler? Gobbler. Goblet?
Gobbler?
I have no clue.
Let's guess.
I don't think it's
one.
Really?
Well, I'm only thinking that Harry's got something to be sad about around Christmas time in the first book.
Yeah. And they're spending so much time in the library trying to figure... Because they're at that point in the story, right? They're trying to figure things out.
Or wait, no, they only figure out Nicholas Flamel, after the break. But they could be looking at him up and then Hagrid gets upset with them. It's like, you lot, keep running. It could be Goblet.
I don't know. I'm not confident in this one. Andrew, be the fearless leader and make an executive decision.
I liked your reasoning about their research in the library.
What if it's wrong?
Actually, wait, what if he's Harry's like stressed around the Triwizard Tournament? I'm going to say Goblet. Damn it!
Oh, it was
one. Oh my
one.
God. See, ladies, let this be a lesson to you.
When in doubt?
We doubt ourselves too much. Don't get in your head.
All right. That's Goblet of Fire.
This one is obviously
Goblet.
We gotta
go. We got 3 minutes.
Beauxbatons. Harry, I think it's Christmas Eve. Deathly Hallows.
Deathly Hallows.
This is from George, and you're not sitting with the prefix today either. Christmas is a time for family.
What? Wait, think about it.
Prisoner.
When does Percy have to stay over the holidays, and why?
When it's they go to visit,
they're in Egypt, so that's
Egypt.
The end of two.
Yeah,
two. Oh, yeah. It was number
no,
one
because they went to Egypt in the summer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Next one from Ron. Cheer up! It's the Christmas holidays. Luna will be home. Got to be order.
No, it'll be because he doesn't even like her. Then it's Deathly Hallows.
Yeah.
Oh, from Dobby. Dobby is only wanting to wish Harry Potter Merry Christmas and bring him a present, sir. 2, 4,
that's
six,
chamber,
or five.
I think.
Chamber? Is it chamber? I thought it was Goblet. Because what's the one with the socks?
Maybe it is Goblet, where he gives him Uncle Vernon's socks.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's Goblet.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were right.
Yes.
Final one. Dumbledore led them in a few of his favorite carols. Hagrid booming more and more loudly with every goblet of eggnog he consumed.
This is when they're all eating together, right?
Three.
Maybe.
Oh.
Is that
when
prisoner?
Trelawney's there?
Oh.
I think it's prisoner.
That does sound. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Damn it. It was two.
Oh,
did
my
we get
God.
50%?
I am shook.
We got 69%. Nice. All right. Well, that tripped us up a decent amount, actually. So that was just the right challenge level, I think. Well, thank you, everybody, again for another great year here at MuggleCast. We're very grateful for you. This next year will be 19 years of MuggleCast. 19 years later.
I feel like the year went fast, but on a recent bonus when we sort of went over what happened and also what to look forward to, I feel like this actually was a good year in retrospect among other years as far as official material. It was certainly a fun year to live and do this show during, so... I think that was all right.
Yeah. I think it was great to get back in person too. And Eric, you and I were in Chicago for LeakyCon, and being able to connect again with our listeners was great. It had been several years since we had done that in Boston. So I was appreciative for that. And also getting to see you, getting to see Andrew. Laura, we got to work on this.
Yeah, we'll make it happen in 2024. There's podcast movement, right?
There is.
That is an option.
Yeah. I'm down for that.
We will jump into chapter by chapter in a moment, but first, this week's episode of MuggleCast is brought to you by Masterclass. Since I was a kid, I've always had an interest in photography. I've always enjoyed the art form, and I felt that I think I got a natural eye for it. But when it comes to the camera equipment and the technical perspective and all that, I don't feel very knowledgeable. I've just been self-taught along the way. But recently, I've been using Masterclass to actually learn from a technical perspective how to achieve the best shots. Classes in photography on Masterclass have helped me boost my confidence and make me feel like I'm on the right track and finally doing things correctly. Masterclass is just amazing. There's over 180 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month. With our audience being readers, I want to recommend that those of you who have writing ambitions check out some incredible courses from the biggest authors: Neil Gaiman, Margaret Atwood, Dan Brown, Judy Blume, Roxane Gay, R.L. Stein. They all teach incredible writing classes, all with different themes. It's like Masterclass instructors are your own personal mentors that are going to help you reach the next level. Masterclass makes a meaningful gift this season for you and anyone on your list, because both of you can learn from the best to become your best, from leadership to effective communication to cooking. Whether you're watching Masterclass on TV, listening in audio mode, in the app, or on their site, the quality speaks for itself. This holiday season, give one annual membership and get one free at masterclass.com/mugglecast. Right now, you can get two memberships for the price of one at masterclass.com/mugglecast. Masterclass.com/mugglecast. Offer terms apply. It's time for Goblet of Fire, Chapter 9, The Dark Mark. And we'll start, like we always do, with our 7-word summary.
Winky.
Struggles.
To.
Explain.
Herself.
To.
Crouch.
Perfect.
Good job, y'all. Second week in a row that I feel like we were aligned. We were in sync.
So the way that we broke up this discussion, we're going to talk about the Death Eaters and the Dark Mark, and then we're going to get into Winky and her situation at the very end of the chapter. I did just want to say that we do discuss some heavy topics in this main discussion, and while we certainly pride ourselves on being a family-friendly podcast, the content can get heavy at times and may not be suitable for all ages. I wanted to do a quick foreshadow alert. It was something that I caught in the early part of the chapter, and it's actually when Harry first falls asleep. It says, Harry saw himself in robes that had his name on the back and imagines the sensation of hearing a 100,000-strong crowd roar as Ludo Bagman's voice echoed throughout the stadium, "I give you Potter." I forgot we had a...
I forgot there too. I had to look for it.
I was like, we have a sound effect for that.
So this is foreshadowing the Triwizard Tournament, you're saying.
Yeah, particularly the first task, right? And right. When Harry enters the stadium to face the dragon, he's got his robe with his name on the back of it. And I'm trying to remember, does Ludo officiate the commentary?
I think so.
Yeah. So it is a really nice foreshadow. Hmm. And of course, it happens in Harry's dreams, where many of the future events tend to pop up from time to time. So
good catch.
That is a good catch, because I think what Harry's imagining and also what we're led to believe as readers is that if anything, it's foreshadowing about Quidditch.
Right.
Yeah.
But we know that this is actually, it could have a double meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. So the sweet dreams don't last very long, and mass chaos ensues. And the Death Eaters use the post-Quidditch World Cup celebration to cause mass hysteria. It's a mix of witches and wizards, some who are terrified and some who are just drunk and enjoying the fun. And this makes it very hard for the ministry to actually get to the Death Eaters that are causing all of this commotion. And there's also a lot of explosions, a lot of curses being fired in different directions. And I thought that this is comparable to how terrorists often use the situation that they create to hide amongst the chaos.
Yeah. What jumped to mind for me was the Boston Marathon bombing, because that was set off in a very busy environment. And of course, when something like that happens in such a busy environment, it's presumably easy to hide in plain sight because there's so many people scrambling, not knowing what's going on.
It's really wild, too, looking at the different... well, this is like basically the culmination of the anti-Muggle sentiment, which will become even clearer throughout the chapter. But what began as harmless fun, or might even be presented as harmless fun, or seem like it to some of these people who are like drunk, not paying attention, chiming in, leads to real harm. And real harm is being done. And so the comparisons to terrorism, or another comparison we're about to make, is exactly very like true and apt, I think, because this is all stemming from people who are ultimately have these biases and don't any longer have any inhibitions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's also an event that is supposed to be a celebration, and it's taking advantage of something that would normally be very positive and leveraging that for their own nefarious purposes in this case. And you know, the Death Eaters are doing a very good job of concealing themselves. They're dressed in these hooded cloaks with masks, and they're marching in a clan-like formation. And I thought to myself that this is very similar to the attire of the KKK here in the United States and the rallies that they often hold. And unfortunately, they still do it to this day. And I'm thinking back to Charlottesville is probably the most recent one that for us here in the United States, we can recall where it's been so prominently displayed on television and other forms of media.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's such a great comparison for this chapter, because I think there's probably a tendency in the wizarding world, as there is kind of in the Muggle world, when something bad happened, a perceived long time ago, people think that because it's not happening anymore, because it's no longer overtly active, that it's done and that we've kind of weeded out that particular cultural rot and we're beyond it. But we're not, because you never fully weed that kind of thing out. And that's why the KKK example is so relevant here, because although the KKK are still alive and well in this country, we know that for a fact, to your point, Micah, they are generally seen as being less influential and less powerful than they once were. I think in some ways, they're seen as being more underground than they used to be. The fact that it still exists at all is obviously a problem, but that just goes to speak to how insidious this kind of discrimination and bigotry can be, that there's still, even if you think it's gone, there's still that undercurrent, right? And I was actually thinking about a historical point of reference that I can personally speak to on this topic, because I can see how somebody reading this chapter could look at Ron and be like, how does Ron not know what the dark mark is? How does he not know what it means? It's crazy to me that he's raised in this world, and it seems like of the three of them, of the trio, Ron should be the person who understands what's going on. But this actually isn't super atypical. Y'all know that I'm from Georgia. I grew up here. The county in Georgia that I grew up in, Forsyth County, up until very recently in history, I'm talking like late 1980s, had declared itself an all-white county. It was a sundown county. where essentially it wasn't safe to be there as a person of color, and it certainly wasn't safe to be there after sunset. And there is a lot of history that you can read about Forsyth County in particular in a book called Blood at the Root that talks about the really violent history in Forsyth County around being a sundown county. So just to put it in perspective, this was happening into the late 1980s. I was born in 1988. So this was happening all around the time that all of us were either just being born or were very, very young. I grew up in Forsyth County, and I did not learn about any of this sundown county or any of the violent history. Sundown policies are enforced through intimidation and violence. And it is well documented that it happened. But again, it wasn't something that was ever discussed or taught to us in school. And even outside of an educational context, nobody ever talked about it. As a matter of fact, I took my eighth grade year of school. My social studies class was called Georgia Studies. And we didn't talk about it there, even though we lived in like the prominent, like probably most nationally prominent sundown county in the country, because Oprah actually went and filmed a special there in like 1986 at great personal risk because of these policies and these ideologies and how dangerous it was to be Black in Forsyth County.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it is highly documented. But if you're a kid and you don't know that that happened, and none of the adults who were there and remember what it was like talk about it, then you're not going to know about it. So it actually makes total sense that Ron has no idea what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like a little bit of a tangent, but it felt like a really relevant real life touch point to what we're seeing happen in this chapter.
Thank you for sharing that.
It is, because both are hiding in plain sight.
Right.
Right. To your point, the experiences that you've had in growing up in Forsyth County with the KKK, they're right there. Right. And nobody necessarily knows, or nobody really talks about it. And I feel like that's the case too with the Death Eaters. Yes, they're walking around and they're cloaked and they're masked, but for so long of a period of time after Voldemort's downfall, they were also hiding in plain sight. And they're using this moment. It's not really clear, like, and we can talk about this later. Are they doing it to have fun? Are they doing it to inspire fear? Is it a little bit of both? And then, you know, bleep gets real once the Dark Mark is actually cast. And I think they actually were scared by that, because mm-hmm. they didn't realize that the situation was going to actually escalate to that level. They weren't expecting Barty Crouch Jr. to be there and cast the Dark Mark. So
yeah, but they unleashed real horrors this evening.
Oh,
and
they were
given that opportunity because everybody just ignores their existence and allows them. It basically creates an environment where something like this can happen. And, you know, Laura, to your extremely personal and relevant point, I just think that the failure to teach new generations about racism, especially in counties where it's practiced, leads kids to just believing that it's a fairy tale, to not understanding the real harm that it does. And it really, I'm just going to say it, is tantamount to complacency. You know, ultimately, it makes it okay. Because you're treating it like it didn't happen, and it did happen, and people were very deeply harmed and continue to be so. So, you know, kids grow up, they believe it's harmless. It just is not a great thing for anybody. And the ministry, you know, we know it's uncomfortable for them to talk about Voldemort in the 13 years, though, since he fell. It's time to actually start preventing that kind of thing from happening again by talking about it. So, Ron not knowing about the Dark Mark is very interesting, but it makes sense. Nobody's talking about it.
Which is frustrating, because to Laura's story and to your points, it's so recent. This is 13 years, really, is nothing. And it's like they're moving on like nothing ever happened. And by the way, Voldemort is still, you know, somewhere lurking.
Yeah. And this is a very obvious sign that the ministry didn't get everybody, you mm-hmm. know, and this is a big F you to the ministry. This is one of the most ministry events of all. Somebody in this chapter says that, too. I can't believe they did this with everyone from the ministry is here. And there's a group of people. We're going to get to what they're doing. But, you know, with the Muggles, and that is, hello, we're free. You didn't get us. Otherwise, we'd still be in Azkaban.
Mm hmm.
I feel like there's a point to be made there about why you never see certain ministry employees and Death Eaters in the same place.
Wow. Mm-hmm. The call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And that's not to say that everyone at the ministry is on board with this, but to your point, Eric, leaning into the complacency because it's comfortable, because you don't want to talk about it, because it was an ugly time. And, you know, best case scenario, you hated it and you hope it never happens again. We all know what happens to people who don't study their history and aren't aware of their history. They're just doomed to repeat it, which is exactly what happens.
Yeah. And you want to say, oh, it's harmless, or oh, it's not going to, or we're better than that. You're not. We are not as people. We are not better than that. And talking about it is the only way you can prevent for it.
Well, this was alluded to a bit already, but the Roberts family are the main victims of the Death Eaters that are marching through the campsite. And they're described as being handled like puppets. They're completely vulnerable. They're unable to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. It's really a nasty scene.
And Ron says at least twice, like, wow, that's really messed up. That is really messed up. This also explains to us why there was such a focus on Mr. Roberts a couple chapters ago. We were kind of wondering about that. Like, why are we even, you know, dealing with this guy? The wizards could have just like sent him out, confused him and sent him far away. But Rowling involved Mr. Roberts and the whole family just to illustrate how terrible Death Eaters are, that they will mess with Muggles in a crowded space for fun.
Yeah, we might want to issue another content warning because specifically of what's being done to Mrs. Roberts, and also what Hermione, what happens with Draco and Hermione later. Like, there's some very ugly stuff here, and it just shows how this cannot be tolerated.
Yeah, and I think that certainly when we went through this chapter the first time, for chapter by chapter, I'm not sure that we were all reading as deep into the text as we're doing now.
Oh, no. I mean,
there's a lot of things that we're, you know, talking about that we've probably gone through our own life experiences in the last 13 years since we've talked Goblet of Fire, and we've seen things happen around the world that are influencing a lot of this conversation. But in particular with Mrs. Roberts, and I apologize because I actually read this somewhere and I can't remember where I came across it, but it, you know, she's flipped upside down to reveal her undergarments, and as if that situation is not bad enough, Draco Malfoy, when the trio run into him a little bit later on as they're kind of trying to escape what's happening, he threatens Hermione with the same kind of treatment. And now you could say, well, Mrs. Roberts is Muggle-born, Hermione is Muggle-born, so he's just making an association. But whether or not this registers in his head, he is essentially threatening her with sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's 13, 14 at this time. I'm not sure that that's necessarily processing. He's just looking to inflict some sort of harm. And we know Draco, he's not going to deliver on it. He's more of a verbal abuser than anything else. But this is pretty nasty. It's about as nasty as it gets, and is about as bad as we see him in the entire series. I can't. Somebody asked the question, I think it was you, Eric, is this his worst moment? I don't know that there is a worse one, honestly. Nope.
Yeah, whether or not he would actually follow through with it, it's definitely a really bad moment. And not that this excuses it, but kids say terrible things sometimes without realizing what they're actually saying and what they're actually talking about. And again, I'm not defending Draco in this moment, but I kind of suspect that that's what's happening here. I have memories of kids, you know, talking a lot of smack. He's doing it because he gets a kick out of it, which is gross.
Yeah, but... and it's funny because he's asked about where his parents are, mm-hmm. and it's very clear that they actually are with that group of people, that he's been left on his own to just be smarmy with people. But it's by the end of this chapter, it said, I think, two or three more times, yeah, Malfoy's parents were probably definitely with that group.
For sure. Like,
well, and the children of these horrible people, yeah, are doing horrible things.
You know, I think in this case, and like most of the time we see Draco, I think that he is a bully and a coward who feels invincible when his parents are sort of on the up and up in terms of their social standing right now. So like in this circumstance, his parents are on the side that holds all the social power in this particular circumstance. So he feels emboldened to bully and terrorize verbally Hermione, and by association, Harry and Ron. But I think just like we see later on in the series, when he, despite holding these ideologies and being sort of on the Dark Lord's side, he can't bring himself to kill Dumbledore, even though it was his mission. He's been setting up all year to be able to do this. I don't know that Malfoy would actually be brave enough in this moment to alert the Death Eaters to Hermione's attention. Or it's to just alert such Hermione to their attention, excuse me.
It's just such a ridiculous threat, too, because she's a witch. That's what Ron says, too. Mm-hmm. She's a witch. She's not a muggle, and muggle-born people are not equatable to muggles, and there's nothing wrong with muggles. He's wrong on so many levels. And the fact that his parents and upbringing told him that it's okay to say this kind of thing, to joke about this kind of thing, is the entire... It shows you everything you need to know about Lucius and Narcissa.
Mm-hmm. Well, and think how much worse this situation would have gotten for the kids in particular if Draco did alert the Death Eaters to Hermione, say the Death Eaters go after Hermione, then what are Ron and Harry going to do? Of course they're going to come to Hermione's defense, and other people are going to as well. Right. And then they're probably going to lose to the Death Eaters. So this could have gotten a lot worse, too.
So getting back to the Roberts family, and it is the mother and the father and the two children, I'm kind of the mind that there is some trauma that isn't fixable from a memory charm or by a memory charm. I think that, you know, they've been doing memory charms on Mr. Roberts at least for weeks now, and his brain is already probably pretty frazzled from it. But trying to make you forget something as prolonged and awful as this probably, I would say, can't be done. So do we agree on that point? And then my second question is, what kind of reparations could the ministry do, or do we expect that they do for this family in the wake of this?
Yeah. They don't do anything.
I was going to say put them in a nice cottage or something by a lake.
They need to set these people up for life. Like, absolutely, like, give them an armed guard forever. Mm. all the gold in a Gringotts vault. Like,
what? But they're muggles. What are they going to do with all that?
The equivalent of all that gold. Oh, no, okay. But like, really, put them somewhere, give them their wildest dreams, and cast all the best charms to keep them comfortable for like at least a generation. That's what they
need something to keep them comfortable. I agree with that.
But they definitely didn't and wouldn't.
Like, well, and this is the ministry's responsibility. Like, there's nobody to fight for the muggles and their how they've been violated in this way.
Yeah. But this is all the more reason to just keep all muggles far away from the Quidditch World Cup and future ones.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Because if something like this didn't happen, something else would happen. Of course, you said they had to keep having their memories wiped. And as we said it a couple of weeks ago, that probably grinds down your brain into mush. So yeah, just keep the muggles away, period.
And this child is spinning 60 feet up in the air. Its head is like lollying from one side to the other. This is, Andrew, when you were talking earlier about Ron, like this is specifically what he referred to as being so sickening. And I don't, part of it too is, and Eric, I know you touched on this, is like, is a child's brain development affected by these types of memory charms, right? Like they're not old enough to the point where their brain would even be fully developed, and they're having an event as traumatic as this happen to them, and then their memory is supposed to be erased, like even it never happened.
Even if they don't have the memory, their body has the memory. Like the exactly. body keeps, like they're going to have PTSD. They're going to be
keeps score. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. In the, you know, in quiet moments and things, they're going to be on edge and not know why. And it's because they've been attacked in this way when they were probably sleeping in their beds completely unaware and roused from their home and paraded through the streets. I said a couple of weeks ago that they were like subdued a little bit magically or something. They're not. They're all conscious. And Mrs. Roberts in particular is entirely conscious this whole time. Mm-hmm. And that is so much worse than what I remembered. And you're right, Andrew, too. There is a component here where it hits harder these days, or we're all talking about this, how today's current climate, when Charlottesville and other events are so recent, really makes it feel and hit harder and feel more possible, like it could happen any day, that this kind of hate is still in this world.
Yeah. There's a great line that trauma isn't what happens to you. It's what happens inside of you as a result of what happens to you.
Wow.
So the event itself is not the trauma. So these individuals, despite the event being wiped from their memory, are still going to have to deal with the after effects of this happening to them.
And not know why.
And not know why. Yeah, right. Exactly.
This is our best Christmas episode ever.
On that note, let's move on to some green lights in the sky.
Yay! Oh, Christmas lights.
Santa.
Christmas lights.
Are they leprechauns? Are the leprechauns back?
No, they went to sleep. They were drunk.
Oh.
So we move along in the chapter, and we're now in a forest clearing type of area, and we hear the incantation Mors Mordre, which is a mix of French words, mort, which means death, which we obviously know from Voldemort's name, and mordre, which means to bite or sting. This is a very scary thing to see in the sky. It's not something that has been seen for many years, and it scares not just the average witch or wizard that's there. It also scares the Death Eaters, because they weren't expecting that.
It shows the inner hypocrisy among all types of people as well, because none of them are really bold enough to send up the dark mark themselves. That's a step too far. They'll torture muggles, you know, in front of large groups of people. But when the mark is cast, that's like saying his name, right? Death Eaters are terrified to say his name. And sending up the dark mark is the exact same thing. And it is a repudiation of the Death Eaters by Barty Crouch Jr., who we know is the one that sends up the dark mark, to tell them that they're cowards and that they aren't really, you know, his loyal followers.
Yeah. And I think it's most comparable to the swastika.
Yeah.
And we think all know that Hitler adopted it as the primary symbol for the Nazi party in the 1920s, the murderous legacy of the Nazi regime, especially the Holocaust, permanently converted the swastika into a symbol of hate and anti-Semitism. And similar to how Nazis would wear a swastika band on their arm, this is something that we're going to learn a little bit later on in this book. Death Eaters had the dark mark etched into their forearms.
And I'm glad that you made the comparison to the swastika for the dark mark mica, because obviously even today, and as we're seeing rates of anti-Semitism on the rise, we are seeing more and more cases of the swastika being used to inspire terror, even if people are just painting it somewhere.
Yeah, and both of these marks are meant to inspire fear, to convey hatred. And to your point, Laura, Arthur mentions during the First Wizarding War how the Dark Mark would be cast above people's homes where Death Eaters had murdered their families. And this is unsettlingly similar to homes or places of worship being marked with swastikas.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And just this idea, Arthur Weasley also says that half the Muggle killings during the First War, during Voldemort's reign, were by people having fun. And that shows you just what a culture or acceptance of tolerance to killing Muggles existed, especially among Voldemort's followers. Like, hey, go out and do this. The Muggles deserve it. They're not like you. They're lesser than. Voldemort is a lot more bigoted and a lot more dark in the pages of this book than he has ever been before for these kinds of real reality checks.
And it was disturbing to see Arthur kind of recount, like, you had to have been there. You don't understand how terrifying it was. Like, that was another really dark moment in this chapter. This is new to Ron and Harry. Hermione is the only one of the trio who understands how serious the Dark Mark is. But what I also found interesting about this is, like, what is the right age to teach kids at Hogwarts about the Dark Mark? It seems they should definitely be educated on it, but then what is the right age? I feel like sooner rather than later, considering this only happened, the only last happened a little over a decade ago.
I mean, look at our own educations. I mean, I remember learning, you know, and there's always an age-appropriate way to teach these things, right? But I remember learning about the Holocaust in like fifth grade for the first time.
Yeah, pretty
and
young.
Again, like, there is an age appropriate way to teach these things. I mean, I think we all read The Diary of Anne Frank probably multiple times in school.
And Night.
And Night, that was another one. So yeah, it seems like there is a way to normalize talking about this horrible thing that happened in their society instead of trying to hide it.
You know, in terms of what's the right age to teach this, Harry just spent the entire last year of Hogwarts with a suspected Death Eater on the loose. That would have been the time for the whole government to start a curriculum on Death Eaters, what they were about, what they did, as a way of teaching and arming the students to suspect and locate him.
Very good point.
What a great year to talk about Death Eaters, honestly, was last year.
Right. This goes to the whole complicity conversation we were having earlier. They look as serious as just being the one rogue agent, right? They don't think broader, the fact that there could be more Death Eaters out there somewhere lurking around. So
it's scapegoating out of convenience, which we see from this ministry all the time. And we're going to see it later in this chapter.
It made me wonder, and we talked a little bit about this with Arthur, you know, what it was like to have lived through Voldemort's reign, what it must have been like to come back home. Like, it had to be a constant thought in the mind of the Wizarding World community when they would go out to work or they would go out to the grocery store or anything, right? Just leave their house. When they came back, they didn't know whether or not they were coming home to something awful. And, you know, it also kind of reminded me of Slughorn. Remember how he behaves in the very early onset of Half-Blood Prince when Dumbledore and Harry come for him? Like, he's in hideout mode. And I'm wondering if that's what a lot of witches and wizards had to do to stay safe from Voldemort.
Yeah, hiding out, dealing with constant uncertainty, probably not able to sleep at night.
Arthur specifically calls it everyone's worst fear, the very worst.
And we also talked briefly about this last point here, you know, whether the Dark Mark was cast to inspire fear in those that were at the Quidditch World Cup or to inspire fear in the Death Eaters themselves. And I think it's probably a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Andrew?
Yeah. But also, I'm wondering, is it inspired by Voldemort's recent progress? Like, are there rumors that Voldemort is making some moves? So it's time to get the band back together and start instilling some fear again. Because I thought we were kind of led to believe that the Death Eaters are, you know, excited about what's been going on with Voldemort, because we also hear Harry thinks to himself, I just had this dream a couple days ago and now this is happening. These things are related, yeah. He suspects.
It does seem like, I can see how from an outside perspective, it seems like the Death Eaters are aware of and in direct like planning with Voldemort. We know that they're not. Voldemort is not directly interacting with any Death Eater besides Wormtail and Barty Crouch Jr. until the end when he calls them to the graveyard. So it's interesting because in the end, Barty Crouch Jr.'s casting of the Dark Mark begins a year-long terror campaign against his fellow Death Eaters. Between this Dark Mark that sends them scuttling, everyone else in the at the group sees all the people in hoods start running when they see it, disapparating immediately. Then the dark marks on their arms starts growing less faint, right? Throughout the year. This is what Karkaroff eventually tells, I think it's Snape. And so to be a Death Eater who is causing this, issue with the Muggles, the Quidditch World Cup, to see the dark mark, to be scared by somebody who's either Voldemort himself or somebody who's like more faithful, cast that to scare you out of your wits. And then to see the mark on your arm, you're going to have to atone for your like deceptions and your departure from Voldemort's inner circle. And that's pretty much what I think is said in this chapter, even, is that the people who got away, the people who claimed that they were, you know, under a guise or something, like, they all abandoned the cause. And right. So Barty Crouch Jr. sees them as hypocrites.
Yeah,
exactly.
And Barty was a fall guy. To mm-hmm. some extent, right? He took the fall. So moving along here, kind of switching gears a little bit. So we do get Winky found at the scene of the crime. She is stupefied. And of course, she is being unjustly accused of casting the Dark Mark and basically convicted in the court of public opinion by several of the folks who are on site. And I wanted to start, though, going back, because we do see Winky earlier in the chapter trying to get away from the chaos. This is when Harry, Ron, and Hermione are, you know, kind of running throughout the campsite. They run into Vila, they run into Stan Shumpike. There's a lot of kind of fun little moments, but Winky in particular, you know, it's noted several times that it appeared as if she was being held back by something invisible. And I wanted to start there. And I know, Laura, you had some comments on this.
I thought this was really brilliant because we know what's actually happening here. It's Crouch Jr. under an invisibility cloak pulling her, right? But Harry remembers that Dobby physically could not disobey orders. So he makes the assumption that Winky is so terrified and trying to run away, but that because she can't physically disobey orders and Barty Crouch Sr. told her to stay put, presumably, she is fighting against herself to be able to run away. That's actually not what's happening.
Two different kinds of invisible forces.
Right.
It's a very fun misdirect. And you could potentially fool readers who really know their stuff as they're reading for the first time. And yet there's something else afoot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a perfect trick to have Harry see something he recognizes and assume that that's the and be like, oh, we've seen this before. We haven't, but thank you for playing.
Right. Yeah, it's just great writing by J.K. Rowling. We see it, as you say, many times throughout the series. But wanted to talk a little bit about Barty Crouch Sr. in this moment. So, you know, I guess to take a step back, as soon as the Dark Mark is cast, ministry officials appear right away and they're looking for the culprit. They blame Harry, or at one point they blame all three of them for having been responsible for this. They say, you know, the noise came from over there, the stupefy spell is fired, and we end up with Winky. But his treatment of Winky is really disgusting on so many levels. And Winky becomes, as this situation unfolds, his convenient culprit. And she is very much torn between protecting Barty Crouch Jr., telling the truth. She gets very edgy and very nervous, almost to the point of revealing what was going on, but she doesn't. And she also wants to keep her job. Mm. I mean, she's essentially at times groveling at the feet of her master, as it's actually said in the pages. And it's just, this is a very sad situation to watch. Like, this is really how house elves are treated.
Yeah. And it's partly sad because these house elves serve their masters, and you would expect that they would be getting some respect back after earning so much trust and putting in so much time over the years. And yet they're still treated like garbage.
Crouch is, in these moments, punishing Winky for getting caught and punishing Winky for failing to keep his son in check. Mm-hmm. And he's also in this incredibly impossible situation with the rest of the ministry officials here too, that he has to constantly defend his own record when it's suggested that, like, he teaches his elf, you know, how to conjure the Dark Mark and all this other stuff. He says, you know, my record shows that he's basically using the existence of his son, which nobody's talking about in this moment. The right. fact that he sent his own son to Azkaban prison, where his son died, presumably, as a way to get out of suspicion for right. any wrongdoing on his part. And it's cruel because Winky is still the fall person for this. And so it's just ugly.
It's a flex, right? It's a flex yeah. by Crouch, specifically in the direction of Amos Diggory. And yeah, it's almost, Eric, it's like the indignation, like the gall you have to question my house elf and my teachings of my house elf, that she would ever be able to do something like this.
But he doesn't let her off the hook because he's still angry that she failed to keep his own son safe. Like,
yeah. There has to be some kind of justice here, right? Like, it can't just be that Winky gets away, even though the evidence suggests otherwise, and we're going to talk about that, right? Harry, Ron, and Hermione heard a deep voice, presumably a male voice, casting Mors Mordra, and only Voldemort's followers know this spell, and very few know how to cast it. And Winky is not in her right state of mind either. Like, that's clear. She is frazzled. She is stressed. She's anxious. She's like had a full week of work or full year of work, not been given much
a
time
full
off.
Life of work. Yeah. She time yeah. off. Yeah.
So I this reminds me of like the conversations we've had about the ministry and how they don't look at the evidence. They go for the convenient culprit, and like they did with Hagrid in Chamber of Secrets. Like they did with Buckbeak in Prisoner of Azkaban. They go at Winky here in Goblet of Fire.
Well, Winky and the kids, because, like, why believe kids?
Well, and you know who's doing that bullying? Amos Diggory is the one who's really doing a majority of the questioning. I want to ask, what the hell is his deal?
He'll get his. Don't worry.
Merry Christmas, Amos.
Oh, my God. No, but like, it's fascinating because I totally forgot he was even in this scene. But he's actually the one doing the majority of the questioning of everyone. And he's questioning Harry. And he actually annoys Arthur. And that is a treat to see Arthur even be like, dude, what are you on about? No, of course not. It's wild, but yeah, Amos Diggory in whatever capacity, I think it's whether he's the one that says he works in Department of Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures or not. Yeah. Like, okay, so that's his edge, but it just, the House Elf holding a wand is why he thinks he can prosecute her, I guess, in this moment.
And of all wands, it's of course Harry's wand.
Right.
And you know, it's funny, I was looking back at some of the notes from the first time we did this chapter, and there's a great line in the show notes that said, "How does Harry forget his wand? It's like your cell phone. You don't leave home without it. You always know where it is." And
well, he loses it
in the box, right?
He doesn't actually lose it in the woods, right? Doesn't.
Right, like he says. It's like he says he lost it in the woods, but he actually lost it long before that, because I think Barty Crouch snuck past Winky and took it out of his back pocket or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But think about how long that is. I mean, several hours, and it's from the time he leaves the box to the time this all happens, he doesn't notice it's missing.
Yeah.
So
Harry's not the most observant guy. I don't know if y'all haven't noticed this.
Harry needs an air tag. Christmas gift for Harry. A little stocking
needs
stuffer.
Needs an air tag.
Aww. Yeah. And I was wondering too, was the wand proficient in casting this spell because it's the brother wand of Voldemort's?
Oh,
that's why it came so easy.
I think it would run on the strength of Barty Crouch Jr.'s conviction alone. Mm. I think he could get a toy wand to cast the real thing.
Whoa. Now that's
the Fisher Price wand.
That's a security nightmare.
Yeah.
All right. So a couple quick points here before we wrap up this chapter discussion, because it's been a heavy one. I was curious, do we think Hermione growing up in the Muggle world informed her views on house elves? And of course, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about this in Goblet of Fire with Spew. And kind of as a contrast to that, do we attribute Ron's views to his immaturity and his own upbringing within the wizarding world? Because we've talked a lot about how house elves are the norm.
Right.
And there's no reason for Ron to think otherwise based on how he was raised. Now, certainly his viewpoints can change as he grows older, and they do. But Hermione seems to have a very clear position on this. And I'm wondering if it's because of what she learned growing up in the Muggle world.
I think it's partly that.
Particularly with slavery.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Partly that. You think of the phrase, hate is taught, whether it's racism, homophobia, etc.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Ron has never known another way with house elves. House elves exist to serve, period. He's never seen, evidently, resistance to house elves and how they serve their masters. So then suddenly Hermione comes in and is like, whoa, wait a second. Then he evolves over time. But I don't think it's Ron being immature. I think that's just how it's always been in the wizarding world. So why think any different? And we also have to keep in mind his age here.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just normal for Ron, like you were saying. And, you know, there are arguments to be made about what modern day slavery looks like, you know, here in the real world. And you can maybe make the argument that because Hermione grew up in this Muggle world, some of those modern day examples might not be things that would immediately stick out to her the way that house elves do, because they're very clearly reminiscent of a type of slavery that I think is oftentimes believed to be, you know, very old, a long time ago, so far back that it seems unimaginable that anyone would do it. And one, it's really not that long ago, but two, it just doesn't exist in this way in Hermione's world. She's never been exposed to it, so she knows it's not normal.
Yeah, it's raw reaction. She's experiencing it firsthand, and she calls it for what it is. And Arthur actually agrees with her. There's a conversation between the two of them where he does agree with how Winky was treated by Barty Crouch Sr., but he says to her, you know, this is not the time for that. And just to kind of end, this starts Hermione being very outspoken and critical, particularly of the ministry. We'll see that. We saw a little bit of it, I think, in Prisoner of Azkaban with everything that went down with Buckbeak. we see more of it in this book. We definitely see it come through in Order of the Phoenix once Umbridge takes over. But this is kind of laying the groundwork. She is not afraid to voice her opinion in front of Barty Crouch Jr., Amos Diggory, Ludo Bagman, and Arthur, right? Those are the main ministry officials that are there because she believes what she's saying is right, and good for her.
Yeah.
Gotta
and she love breaks her. She breaks her usual alliance with Percy too. We see Percy tries to defend Barty Crouch Sr.'s treatment of Winky, and Hermione surprises him when she's like, actually, no, that was not the move. That is not it. And Percy is kind of taken aback. He's not used to Hermione disagreeing with him because they're both such, rule followers.
It's such a crappy thing for Percy to do because and it's just like after all that's happened to him with his family, he's lost any and all respect. And after Crouch himself got his name wrong recently, like earlier today, he's still obligated to defend Crouch and his honor. And it's just so pathetic. It's like I'm usually a Percy apologist, but I can't get behind this. This is just extra pathetic and it's awful and it's only going to alienate him from his family.
So yeah. I'll kick off some odds and ends. We have a segment, if you will, a game. I don't know what we call these little things besides sound effects. We have this one that we rarely use called Evanesco That. And I want to use Evanesco That on half of this chapter because there is way too much back and forth going in circles. He said, she said, elf said in this chapter. And I feel like it's way overdone. It feels so redundant.
Yes, it does. But that's how chaos happens in the real world, right? You can't know, even in a magical world. I think what's being illustrated is even in a magical world, when you have so many talented wizards here, nobody can really actually know what happened and the sheer chaos of it.
And don't get me wrong, there's critical moments in this chapter, learning about the Death Eaters, the Dark Mark, learning about Priori and Contatum, Tatum. Hermione's disgust over the treatment of house elves. Like, there's plenty there, plenty big plot developments and all that. But I don't know, just reading this chapter a couple times, it's like, all right, come on, we get it. Let's keep moving here. So anyway, Evanesco half of this chapter. There's no toilet effect in there.
I was like, is it a flushing toilet sound?
No.
I refused to put that in there.
I like the paper rustling.
Yeah.
I do agree with you, Andrew, but I will say I think a lot of groundwork was laid.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But enough of the back and forth. Like, we don't need that.
Thank you.
You know what?
Look, there's going to be enough back and forth at holiday parties this holiday season. Am I right? This is a holiday episode.
Oh, God. The back and forth. Yeah, you're right. It's not Christmas without a back and forth. I think it's just meant to illustrate these specifics, because it's actually masterfully done the way Winky has to lie to save Crouch Jr., but she has to lie to Crouch Sr. to do it. And she, all the while asserting that she did not cast the Dark Mark, which she didn't. It's really masterful how she's able to kind of, and it does her no favors, but the writing, the dialogue there that happens is actually clever.
So a few other odds and ends. It's noted at the beginning of the chapter that Fred and George have big plans for their winnings.
Love it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really foreshadowing.
It's nice to see it teased in advance.
We've already had a chapter named Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, actually. So
we did.
There you go.
And they were big plans.
Do we have a sound effect for a tease?
No.
We do get a mention of Beaubaton and Madame Maxime. They are name dropped by a couple of students who seemingly have lost Madame Maxime. So
it sounds like there was a field trip and Madame Maxime took a bunch of her students to the Quidditch World Cup, which is really cool.
Yeah, she's cool.
It is cool.
Stan Shumpike trying to court some Vila with his friends. Harry comes across that in the forest. And then we mentioned this. Mm-hmm. Amos uses Priori Incantato, which is the actual spell. I think the action is Priori Incantatum. So Another Diggory will be a part of that a little bit later on in the book.
Yeah, well, the other thing is when the Dark Mark comes out and diminishes, it said it's a ghost of a spell. And that specifically is very foreshadowing to the other ghosts that come out at the end.
That's very true.
I love that.
Yeah, I like that.
Let's play the foreshadow sound effect again, because we have had a couple there. There we go. I get cheered up every time I hear that.
That was a loaded chapter, so I appreciate everybody going through it with me. And hopefully the next chapter is a little bit more cheery as we start off 2024.
Yes, better we got this done at the end of 2023, I suppose. Now it's out of the way.
The next chapter is called Mayhem of the Ministry, so I don't know how much cheerier it's going to be, but at least we're not at the ministry to witness it, so...
It's probably going to be a lot of mayhem in 2024 as well. So in a way, it's fitting. So
and we have to remember what book we're reading right now. Like there's not a whole lot of cheer in this book.
So. Well, it's not book five.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that one gets bad, too. But this one you're dealing with. Well, I won't take up much more of our airtime, but you're dealing with some pretty heavy themes for the first time in the series. Voldemort coming back. That's a big one.
Oh, yeah. Right.
All right. Let's move on to MVP of the week. I'm going to give my MVP to the phrase hither and thither. Used in the line, Harry felt himself being pushed hither and thither by people whose faces he could not see. It was a dark scene, but I was like, hither and thither. I just thought it was a really funny phrase.
Can I also just say, though, I don't understand the decision to split up. Like, okay, Harry, Ron, Hermione, you go by yourselves. You know what?
Yeah.
I know they did. They.
This is a Christmas episode. We're all about being together for the holidays.
So who suggests that? Who's our least valuable person this week?
It was Arthur, who's also my MVP, but we can give him a pass on that.
So why does Arthur get your MVP?
Because of his, you know, negotiation skills amongst ministry officials. Putting Amos in his place, you know, he kind of like wrapped up that situation. It was getting to Andrew's point earlier. There's too much talking going on. Arthur was like,
it's too much hithering and tithering.
Exactly. And you know what? Dad kept everybody safe. Okay. He kept everybody safe at the end of the day. There were a few cuts and bruises. I think Charlie or Bill's shirt was ripped. That's probably a fanfic.
He did that to himself.
He did it to himself.
Arthur's son, Ron, had a great line when they came across the villa, and Ron said, "Did you know that I've built a broomstick that'll fly to Jupiter?" And I don't know, I know Ron's a little under the spell of the villa, but that's a brilliant line. I think that's a great brag.
I wanted to give mine to Hermione's early justice arc. I'm really excited to see this develop over the next couple of books.
If you have any feedback about today's discussion, you can contact us by emailing or sending a voice memo recorded on your phone to mugglecast@gmail.com or by using our phone number, which is 19203-MUGGLE. That's 19203684453. Next week, well, no new episode next week, but we'll see you in 2024. And we'll be releasing two bonus MuggleCasts over the break to keep you entertained. And hopefully you enjoy those and then you pledge at patreon.com/MuggleCast or you tap into the show on Apple Podcasts and subscribe there, because both platforms will be offering bonus MuggleCasts in the new year. By the way, there's a Patreon banner within Spotify as well. You can tap in and then get our audio benefits right in Spotify after you pledge. And now it's time for Quizzage.
The final Quizzage question of 2023 was, from which book does Hermione learn about Beauxbatons Academy of Magic? And the correct answer was An Appraisal of Magical Education in Europe. I don't know why she didn't find out about it from Hogwarts of History. You would think that there would be a section for all the other schools, right? Anyway, I'm feeling generous, so for Christmas, which one of you would like to get to read the Quizzage winners?
Micah, I think you should read it, because one of these here is for you.
All right. Correct answers were submitted by Martin Miggs, the Mad Muggle, Justice for Winky, Professor Stumblemore, Fleur's Hot Vila Grandmother, Severus Snape's grease clog drain. Did you know in French, Hufflepuff is pouf souffle or pouf souffle? George Weasley's surviving ear. Coriolanus Snow. Is that a reference to the Hunger Games?
It's a Hunger Games thing.
It's a stop delaying. Get to the next one.
All right. Micah, will you marry me?
Aww.
You got to answer them. No.
Sure.
Oh.
That was easy.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Hot dark mark pickup lines. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. Nice reference to
the movie.
Karkaroff and Snape. Yeah. Elizabeth K. Muggle cast is the only, or no, it wasn't. Sorry. I'll go back to that.
It's Barty Crouch Jr. at the end.
It's Barty Crouch Jr. at the end. Sorry. Elizabeth K. Muggle cast is the only thing keeping me sane in this Muggle world. Buff Daddy, Melissa, and my submission, which didn't make it. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's the Robertses.
Oh,
wow.
You're never getting to. I thought that was a little extra traumatic to read. Oh. So I didn't include it.
Well, Micah was the one reading the correct answers this week. So,
yeah, he did get it correct, though.
Next week's Quizzitch question. Next year's.
First Quizzitch question of the new year. What did Rita Skeeter once call Bill Weasley in an interview with Gringotts Curse Breakers? This is a very specific one, but I like it. Thank you, Meg, for submitting that one.
Visit MuggleCast.com for transcripts, social media links, our full episode archive, our favorite episodes, and to contact us. If you enjoy the show and think other Muggles would too, please tell a friend about the show when you see them over the holidays. We would also appreciate if you left us a review in your favorite podcast app. That would be a great gift for us. Thank you very much. We love reading those reviews. All right, that does it for this week's episode and this year of MuggleCast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Safe travels over the holiday season. Safe consumption of holiday delights. You all will be receiving cookies from me if you haven't already.
I got mine today.
Wonderful. Aww. Wonderful.
You mean from Pat?
Okay, well, somebody put them in boxes and mailed them, and that person was me. So
thanks, Pat.
Yeah, I wanted to call out, I got the cookies, and then a couple of days ago, I also got a really sweet package from Eric.
Yeah.
I did too. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
I'd say what Eric got me, but I'm not sure I should say it on this family-friendly program, but thank you.
It's not safe for MuggleCast. Yeah.
Mine is very wholesome. I got a Christmas card from Ron Weasley. And a camping book and a wilderness survival book, because I talked about loving camping.
It
was great.
Yeah. I actually consulted Andrew on that, and he said it would be a great gift. So we all helped. We all came together. Don't we love each other so much?
We do.
Well, I'm still waiting for my gift from Laura and Micah, but I think we all do.
Oh.
Well,
okay. I love you all very much.
We are doing a Secret Santa gift exchange on our other show, Millennial, this weekend. So I'm not saying your gift is coming from me, but you will be getting a gift in the Secret Santa exchange.
Oh, perfect. That's perfect.
Laura
That's
got Andrew, everybody.
Maybe.
And speaking of Secret Santas, I did just want to give a big thank you to Shannon for this really awesome 3 broomsticks beer glass that I will certainly be utilizing this holiday season. And this was all part of the annual Secret Santa we do over on Facebook with our patrons.
That's one of my favorite logos of all time, is the 3 broomsticks logo with the 3 brooms that are in a triangle. I think that's just...
And it says established 1621.
Feels authentic. That's cool. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again for another great year. We'll be back in the new year with many more episodes of MuggleCast to come, and hopefully many exciting developments with the TV show and theme park and everything else. Check out that 2024 preview again at patreon.com/MuggleCast. I think that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew, hithering and tithering one last time in 2023.
I'm Eric, riding on that broomstick that goes to Jupiter.
I'm Micah, just excited that I survived the Quidditch World Cup.
And I'm Laura, and I love you all.
Aww. Bye, everybody.
I had the best one.
Bye.
Bye.